Welcome to Bitch Talk, booze and interviews straight from the heart of San Francisco. This is Ange. I'm in the studio, and we had an extremely special day today. I just got to interview probably one of my favorite actors as a child, Emilio Estevez, Mr. Estevez. He's wonderful. He is here talking about a film that he wrote, directed, produced, and starred in called The Public. And it's about librarians. He plays a librarian in downtown Cincinnati during the worst cold front that they've ever seen. And the homeless people who spend their days in the library decide to host a peaceful sit-in overnight because the homeless people have been dying overnight in the cold. And that escalates into a face-off with the police and the media, and many things ensue from that. But it's a great film. I love the message. I love how he's putting libraries back on blast, the importance of them and why we need them. And he's just a lovely person. I was super nervous, and thankfully this was a phone interview, so I didn't have to worry about what I look like. But I was extremely nervous and so excited, and he completely lived up to my expectations. So I hope you enjoy this interview. I'll see you on the flip side. All right, I don't think I need to do any introductions here. Mr. Emilio Estevez, thank you so much. It's an honor to have you on Bitch Talk.
My pleasure to be here.
Well, I want to thank you for this film. You're here to promote The Public, which you wrote, directed, produced, you starred in. Is that it? Did you do lighting? Did you do some grip work? Anything else? Kind of an underachiever here.
Yeah, you know, I was sort of, I was slacking that while we were shooting, for sure.
Well, this is,
you know, I've been working on this for 12 years, and you know, you when I first began the project, of course, I had a lot of support and, you know, a big producing team and lots of, you know, everyone was rallying around it. But then as the years went on, and as, you know, we lost our funding, and obviously the world changed quite a bit during the course of trying to get this picture made, I found myself more and more alone. And then it was, okay, you know, I'm going to have to step up and do a few jobs here to get this thing made. Mm-hmm. And I did. And you know, I think that the movie is probably way more relevant now than it would have been had we made it 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
Even
absolutely.
5 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is these things happen for a reason. Maybe it was meant to come out now. Specifically, I mean, you're talking about social activism, mental illness,
right.
Homelessness. We're talking about the biggest cold front that Cincinnati has ever seen. I mean, global warming.
Right.
So I don't know.
That's right.
It's serendipitous in a way.
It is, sadly. And yet, you know, it's that fine line, especially when you're asking an audience to you know, dig into their wallet and come and pay to see this movie. You know, the question we've asked ourselves is, well, you know, is this something that the same stories, are they going to see on the evening news or online? And what I hope that I've done is I've made an entertaining movie as well as a movie that deals with a lot of the social issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because certainly as we've screened it across the country, and I've got another 2 weeks left of this cross-country screening tour that I'm doing, where I'm going from city to city, screening for at libraries, at some film festivals, for homeless advocacy groups, and along the way, that the audiences continue to react and laugh and be moved by the piece. So I think that yes, you can see a lot of what we're talking about on the evening news, but you're not going to see it in this way.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to see it told in an entertaining and heartfelt and also very funny way.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to talk about the setting of the library. And you started thinking about this story 12 years ago, and it was because you were doing research for your 2006 film, Bobby, correct?
That's right.
And you were doing
right.
research. You were just chilling at the library in L.A. doing research, Emilio Estevez. That's peak L.A. right there.
You know, I would. It was actually history and genealogy in the basement there, and it's a very big library.
Right.
So
yeah, I've been there. It's great.
One of the few floors that you can actually hide out in. And on Bobby, you know, this was This was prior to the LA Times being completely digitized and available online, and so everything was on microfiche.
Mm.
So it was the daily grind of
I love the microfiche.
The putting the microfiche
it's
up.
It's so
and
fun,
rolling
yeah.
through it and stopping or not stopping and hitting print, and it's a dollar a page.
Right.
So there was a lot of that in the research for Bobby. But then this article comes out in 2007 after we had wrapped up pretty much all the everything we had, that was left to do on Bobby was done by that point. And I was looking for a follow-up film and wondering what the heck it was going to be. And I read this article in the LA Times called Written Off. Online, it was printed under on the website Tom's Dispatch, and that title of it was What They Didn't Teach Us in Library School. And it was written by Chip Ward, who was a retiring Salt Lake City librarian, who basically was talking about how libraries have become de facto homeless shelters and how librarians were now forced into being first responders.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is all before librarians were, or were they now, trained in the use of Narcan to treat opioid overdoses.
That's insane. Yeah.
So it is, as you said, it is. These things have a way of finding their own time that doesn't necessarily line up with ours and our own impatience to get things done. But listen, I'm grateful for being able to have had the opportunity to make the film. And the fact that it's now landing with audiences is just the icing on the cake.
Right. That just makes it all worth it to see that people,
indeed,
not only people that didn't know this situation that's happening in the libraries, but also for librarians themselves to watch it and say, okay, you got it right. You finally shared our story. Because did you notice any stories like this when you were spending all your time in the library? Did you see a lot of homeless people just sort of hanging out in there or anything?
Oh, yeah,
come
huddling
up?
To come in and huddling before they go out and not wanting to be out in the elements. And,
mm-hmm.
and most of the shelters will clear out at around 7, 8 in the morning would be the latest. And now if your library doesn't open until 9 or 10 and you are in the middle of experiencing what we just went through here in the Midwest, where we had this extreme polar vortex come through and people were dying on the streets. Those 2 hours are critical. And then once you're inside, you do not want to go out. So yes, libraries were filling that need. And in fact, I think it was finally a library just this year in Nova Scotia. Leave it up to the Canadians, right? library in Nova Scotia says we will stay open overnight.
Wow.
And all are welcome.
Wow, that's incredible. And how many of these, so you interviewed both librarians and homeless people for this film?
That's right.
How did that go?
That's right. Yeah. It went well. Again, there when you are researching as a filmmaker, as a screenwriter, you're often met with a certain amount of skepticism. And also there is the need to try to be anonymous as possible, so you can observe people in their natural state, if you will. So, and not putting on a show because it's me,
right.
But the librarians that I spent time with, and I was able to observe and speak with, were all very helpful, and they were. I think they understood the mission. What they didn't ultimately understand was how long these things can take to get made. So I think there was, if anything, there was some level of frustration is, when are you going to make this damn thing?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
when is this thing
so
ever going to get done? And,
yeah.
And then once we made it, when's it coming out? Because, these days with independent film, it seems that the easy part of it is making it. The tough part then is the marketing and distributing it and making sure that your movie actually does get seen.
That's so funny because I have a little side project I've been working on for 6 years, and I get that question all the time, and I'm like, trust me, when it's ready to be seen, I will be shouting it from the rooftops. Leave me
That's
alone
right.
in the meantime.
That's right. Yeah, people, again, they oftentimes people think when a movie comes out on Friday, well, they must have just finished working on it on Thursday.
Yeah, you just shoot it, you just put the thing together, that's it. What's wrong? What's taking so long?
Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love
it's
great to have the excitement and the follow-up, but it's like, okay, leave me alone, please. But on the topic of these librarians being, you know, both social workers and first responders, obviously there are some scenes in the film that are both funny and, you know, hard to watch. How many of these stories came from actual real life events?
Well, so, you know, there's a sequence in the film. You remember the sequence where the patrons are asking one silly question.
Oh, yeah.
Another. And they're not silly, but the majority of them are. Those are all real life questions.
Oh my God.
Those are the librarians that I asked. I said, give me your top 10. What are your top 5?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there are a lot available online as well that I gleaned from. Even the very last line in the film where the patron asks, he says, I'm looking for a miracle. Can you help me find one? That is not invented by me. That's an actual question.
Wow.
That was asked of a librarian. So I thought that was a really apropos way to end the
yeah,
movie.
I love
we're all
that.
Looking
yeah.
For a miracle.
No kidding.
I was fortunate enough to ultimately be embraced by the library world. We took the film to ALA conference down in New Orleans last June, and we screened for several thousand librarians over a weekend. And the very first screening, I mean, you can imagine, I was sweating bullets because
yeah.
I thought if we don't stick the landing with librarians, we're cooked.
Right.
And so the movie ends. I come down the from backstage, and I stood to face what I thought were going to be my executioners, and they were wildly applauding. And then the very first question that came out of the audience was, "How did you get us so right?"
Oh, I love that.
So I breathed a giant sigh of relief.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we took the film up to Seattle for the midwinter ALA conference, the American Library Association conference, and once again, same reaction. And as you probably know, there are almost 120,000 libraries across the country, not counting the academic libraries. So, if librarians mobilize behind the film and they go out and see this, I think that they could be making some noise on our behalf.
Right. Yeah, I love that you're just kind of reminding people, hey, these are still institutions. These are still here. We need to protect them, and we need to support them.
Well, and that's the basis of Eric Kleinenberg's book, Palaces for the People, that just came out recently, where he talks about how libraries are the cornerstone of the social, what he coined the social infrastructure that a thriving democratic society will and does rely on.
Hmm.
And that we shouldn't be defunding these, free-for-all spaces and institutions. We should be doubling down, and we should be building more of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in terms of these special institutions, you were shooting this in a functioning library in Cincinnati. So Cincinnati,
that's correct.
You live there now, correct? You moved out of LA.
Well, I have a place there that's it's in disrepair. So I'm little by little. It's an old brownstone. In the heart of the downtown area, actually in the over the Rhine area, and I'm in the middle of rehabbing it. It was built in 1881, so if
wow.
You can imagine,
yeah,
it's got some. It's a beautiful old building, but with that aesthetic comes with a lot of work to do yet.
Oh well, I can't wait for the housewarming party. I accept.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate this film because it deals with extremely heavy topics, but you've said, you know, there's an audience out there for a more kinder, gentler movie. It's just real easy to be cynical these days, and you've really chosen to show the humanity side, and I think that speaks to you just in your career and as a person. In all your years in Hollywood, you've really maintained this sort of humility, this sort of like good guy in Hollywood, you know, someone to give us hope. Like we're not all shot to hell, but I really appreciate that. I don't understand how you've been able to do that, because I've been doing this podcast for what, 3 years, 4 years. There's more
right.
dirt out on me than you. How do you do it?
You know what? I've managed to find hobbies, because I think that if you don't, you will quickly go bananas, and then you may lean into getting yourself into trouble. You know, for 10 years while I was in between movies and went off to do the way. I got into winemaking and I was growing my own food and learning how to bake bread and make cheese and kind of homesteading.
Yeah.
And I got a real, it was a lot of work, but it was a real thrill to have outlets to channel my energy, as opposed to going out there and acting like a damn fool, which you see so many people do.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not pointing fingers at you specifically. I'm just saying all you have to do is go online and you can see who's acting up.
Right. Absolutely.
And now we're certainly in a we're in a culture where that is, but where people act up to get more clicks and more likes and more followers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that touches on another important thing that you wanted to represent in this film was addiction, and not only dealing with the addiction and overcoming it, but then dealing with the repercussions of it coming back to haunt you.
That's right, and being punished by the media, who want to continue to criminalize the marginalized people and the poor, and those who have struggled with addiction, and so there's some. His past is not something that he's running from, but I think that where Stuart is in his heart and in his mind is he's at a really sort of quiet and good place, and then all of this happens.
Right.
and then
it all goes to shit.
Right. And under these extreme circumstances, we'll see people relapse. Right.
Right.
And it's not uncommon for someone who will maybe have 10 years of sobriety to have this, to have an incident happen, and we see a full relapse. So I think that there's a measure of madness going on with his character that, he's towards the end, he's really just trying to keep it together.
Aren't we all?
Well, yeah, indeed.
Well,
indeed.
Emilio, Mr. Estevez, thank you so much for coming on Bitch Talk. I could talk to you all day, but
thank you.
33 years after we saw you in the Breakfast Club, we find you in a library again.
That's right.
I'm hoping in another 33 years we can have another rendition. We'll see. Maybe you can figure out another library story in 33 every 33 years.
Indeed.
Well, thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. That was my interview with the incredible Emilio Estevez. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. I think, Shar, can we end the year right now? Let's just end it on a high note. I don't want to carry on. Please, please, please go out and see The Public. It's out in theaters on April 5th, so check out listings near you. And go to bitchtalkpodcast.com for photos, past episodes. Follow us on our socials. Rate, review, subscribe, do all these things. It really matters, and we really appreciate you. And I'm excited to announce that we are on BFF FM from 5:30 a.m. to 6 a.m. on Mondays for your morning commutes. And Emilio, if you're still listening, I'll see you at the housewarming party. Bitch, please.